Some weeks you really need Shabbat. And yesterday morning when I woke up and saw the news, it was certainly a day in which Shabbat is useful, because sometimes the world just breaks your heart. And I'd hate to have to count how many times I've had to stand up here and give a talk about gun violence or a school shooting or another terrorist attack, because we'd like the numbers to be zero. And yet we know that these attacks do occur and will occur. And so I thought today, rather than just railing against the darkest parts of our world, that it might be helpful to sort of contextualize it and maybe even give a strategy for how we ought to think about and approach and talk about terror and the small groups and even the white nationalists who currently are having their moment in the terrorist sun. But before we even go there, I think it's important that we realize that no single group gets to have the credit for it, and no group, if you take the history into account, has been immune to the use of terror in their history or in their present. And whether it was Jews fighting against the Romans and utilizing terrorist methodologies, whether it's the world of today, whether it's a decade or more ago where we saw plenty of terror coming out of Islamic circles, or whether it's the rise in the last couple of years of white supremacist terror, every group has to own that in some way, at some point, we are all guilty. That there's something in the human soul that permits this level of violence to erupt out. And I worry that when we don't take that piece of responsibility for it, that it becomes very easy to blame rather than to try to understand. And blame rarely gets us to move forward in the problem. So I want to share with you a book that 8-10 years ago was a Bible of mine and that I carried around for quite a long time. Steven Pinker's The Better Angels of Our Nature, Why Violence Has Declined. And unlike someone like Malcolm Gladwell, who pretends to be science, Pinker's book is real science and really deep research. And what he's done is gone from Paleolithic times to the present to realize that despite the news cycles we see, there is far less violence in the world than ever before. And that should give us encouragement and hope at a time when we're dealing with tragedies like what happened in Christchurch. What I want to do, though, and what he lays out in a section on terror, is an attempt to understand why it is that terror comes about, its utilities, where it fits into the scheme of things. And the first thing to remember is that terror's power lies in that it sows far more fear than the actual damage it causes. Through most of the U.S. history, including during the years of the when the World Trade Centers were taken down, which was the highest, that was one death per 100,000, at that moment in American history, five times that number of people were killed by gun violence in our country. Five times people were killed from homicides than through terror. So even, and normally in America, for example, and New Zealand would be even lower, it's around 0.001% of the deaths that occur, of violent deaths. So when we think about these moments and they capture our attention and they rip us apart emotionally, and they do, certainly I will speak for myself, they do, it's really important to realize that this is statistically insignificant, but morally and emotionally a crisis. You get the difference between those two? It's very, very important. Because the way that we respond ought to be driven not just by our fear, but by what's actually happening and what these numbers are like. And when it comes to terrorists themselves, there's certainly a tremendous power that terror has. With the smallest amount of resources, you make this huge amount of impact in the world. You capture the news cycle, and we're all familiar with that. But what is it about terror itself that is so appealing to the terrorists? And here's where Pinker really gets into the twisted power of community. We're here in a community because we hope that it is one that supports us in the best ways, ways that elevate us. But terrorists develop communities of meaning and support and of purpose and believe that they are doing something that gives their lives tremendous significance. And so it's not very different from other communities and how they constitute themselves. And it is very much like those who have ever been in the army know that you develop sorts of friendships that exist nowhere else in your life. That terrorists form these cells and have a bond that is more powerful than any of the trappings of civilization that we care about. And if you speak, as I have spoken with people who've served honorably in the military, they will tell you that tremendous kinship, that brotherhood that results. What we've seen in New Zealand with this is that the brotherhood, even of lone actors, is intact. And when you look at the YouTube channels like 4chan and 8chan, and even going in, the sick guy with a camera on his head is not only to increase the fear, but it is to connect with all of his brothers who feel similarly that the world is under attack against white people. And that to share that, because on an evolutionary process, if you're going to give up your life, you have to be assured that in some way your genes are going to get passed on. And so Pinker's actually tracked this on the scientific basis, and that these terrorists, if they think that they have a kinship, a brotherhood, a gene, an ideological gene, they are willing to give up their lives because they believe that the message and what they stand for will go on and have more power. And here I think is where we have a tremendous problem, because every time the news cycle bursts into action on this, and I'm not saying, I don't know what we do about this, but every time it does, what it means is that we are actually fulfilling the mission of the terrorists and their groups. When we talk about it, when we discuss it, when we other these horrible people and their acts, we are reinforcing the message that they are their own identity, that they have no place in human society, and therefore their very message that the world is being taken over and that they are under attack is reinforced. And so, on a personal message, I am so deeply disturbed whenever these actions are horrible, but what sort of pain and what sort of alienation do you have to be under to take people's lives, to walk into a mosque where people are praying in this state of incredible vulnerability and mow them down? We have failed so many people over and over and over again. And we can try to harden our institutions, and we're doing it in ways visible and invisible here. And we can try to increase our, you know, big data tracking people and looking for early precursors so we can try to stop these attacks, which are statistically very tiny, and therefore probably we will never be able to stop them. But there is a deeper call to action for us. And I feel like I keep saying it, but the call to action is that we must make friends and talk with people who think differently than we do. We have to stop othering even the haters, even the murderers. Not that we don't hold them accountable, not that we don't try to stop them, not that we don't punish them in appropriate ways, but until we find a way to really have it seem like we are all on the same side, the human side, I think I'll be up here again and again and again as the terror continues. And I don't think any of us want that. It's not an encouraging message. It's not a quick fix. It doesn't have the great joy of getting to blame someone and yell and scream at the terrorists. But that won't stop them. It never has up until now. Maybe it is possible to develop a utopia we have not yet seen. Mashiach, we're waiting for you. Shabbat Shalom.